The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. Good morning. It is Wheels Up Wednesday, May 15th, 2024. A week from today, we'll be talking about the election results for, next Tuesday's election, the primary election. Not sure what the turnout is so far. We ended up getting our ballots in here recently, not too long ago. And if you're thinking about mailing, might want to reconsider. Might take longer than you think. Now, I do understand that all you have to do is essentially it'll get counted, even if it ends up being late. As long as it's postmarked in time, it'll be there. But I just don't think it's a good idea to mail your ballot anyway. I know they'll take up to a week. It's like election season that we have now. Boy, I'll tell you. Talk about any kind of hinky. What sort of hinky could come in when you can count ballots that come in, even if the postmark is not necessarily all that great? It's true. I mean, this is what happens when you have a Secretary of State and a state legislature looking to make it really easy to vote, so easy that it's easy to cheat if you're a bad actor, That's all I'm saying, just my claim. We'll talk with Secretary of State candidate Dennis Linthicum about that. By the way, at the 7:30 talk, we always kick it around with the Linthicums every Wednesday. Always enjoy talking with them. I just received a card here, and this is the reason I was talking about the mailing and the ballot. I got a note here from Bob Shan of Medford. You know, Bob calls the show quite often, and we talk about the various issues of local concern here quite often. He says, "Hi, Bill, just a note to test the stormy waters of the U.S. Postal Service per your show this morning." This was written on May 9th, by the way. "This is a test letter. I will drop this off at Tiff's gift store." Yeah, the Hallmark store in town. "And by the Bi-Mart on Biddle Road. Keep up the good work. Kind regards, Bob Shan." So he mailed it May 9th. And I got it yesterday, May 14th. So it is 5 days for a first-class card, first-class letter to go from... to go from Tiff's Hallmark, over by Bi-Mart in Medford on Biddle Road. Takes 5 days to go from there to go to 3624 Avion Drive in Medford, where we work here at KMED and KCMD. Working hard for you, working hard. No wonder when I mail out those Diner 62 quiz prize winners, you know, every time the winners get, I send it out to them in the mail, make it easy for folks. And sometimes they say, "Did you send that out?" Yeah, I did. Although I have to admit, sometimes I send them out in bulk. I'll take two or three at a time because I'm just not the best at follow through on some of that stuff. But be that as it may, wow, 5 days to go across town. We almost need a Pony Express for Medford in Grants Pass, don't we? We'll just have a horse take around your local mail and bypass the U.S. Postal Service entirely. Pony Express. Pony. Of course, I don't know. It couldn't be any slower, right? 5 days. Wow. What do you think about them flings, huh? Join in at 770-5633, 770-KMED. A couple of stories here, some odd stories, and really tragic in some case, too. I was thinking about this poor Good Samaritan in Joe County, 39-year-old woman, Justine Nord. Actually, she was the passenger in a car, but she was in this car, and it rolled off the side of the road, and it trapped her inside. This happened a couple of days ago, actually. A sheriff's office ended up reporting Justine Nord, the passenger of a car that pulled over on Winona Road in Joe County, because the driver of that car was saying, "Oh, there's somebody here on the side of the road. The car is disabled," and wanted to help the person whose car had broken down. And so the driver of the car that Justine was in told the sheriff's officers they were outside of the vehicle when it started rolling. So I don't know if it popped out of gear, or the parking brake wasn't on, or whatever it is. But then the car rolled off the roadway and then rolled over, and Justine was trapped and then didn't make it. Very sad. Very sad. And, of course, I have to tell you, a teachable moment for all of us. I think that's something that is worth thinking about. And I'm sure that the driver of this vehicle that rolled is just feeling horrible. Just horrible. I mean, This has almost happened to me a couple of times, though, and I've had to get really religious. You know how I go up on a lot of forest roads and maintain transmitter sites, and I'm in the 2002 4Runner that we have. I got to tell you, that's just my rock-solid, dependable, beat-up engineering vehicle. But, you know, hey, it always runs and gets me there in and out. The challenge you get to is that I'll go up to a gate, and I'll be in four-wheel drive, and I'm locked to the hubs and everything else doing that because that's what I'm doing, going up and down these forest roads to get to some of these mountaintop transmitters. And so then when I'm at the gate and I'm leaving a site, and then I have to take it out of four-wheel drive and put it into the high range so that way it's okay for the highway speeds, you know, that sort of thing. And so I'll put it in neutral, or I'll put it in park, and then I'll take the little lever that switches it from high to low, and I can chunk it in there one time. And so I thought it was all good. I had the transmission in park, and then I was switching it from high to low range, and I didn't really have it completely into the high range. So it was sort of in between. And then I started getting out of the car. And thank goodness I had my foot near the brake, because the car started rolling because I didn't have it completely in gear. And so it wasn't really engaged to stop the 4Runner from rolling. And I learned from that point forward that parking brake, boom, goes on every time. Every time, because if I, you know, I could have been dragged by the vehicle. It could have gone off the road or been crushed or something like that. And these are the sort of things that we learn. And safety procedures, we got to be extra careful. And also, not just trusting putting the transmission in gear. Because those parking brake or the transmissions have the a pawl that will lock the transmission when you put it in park. But they can break, too. They don't always engage, and sometimes those pawls can break. And then you think you've locked the car, and you've put it in gear and put it in park to stop it from rolling. And it keeps going. Yeah, use the parking brake. Just very sad about that, though. Another story that touched me the other day. We had a 31-year-old man from Medford, John Rocha, sentenced to, about 6.5 years in federal prison and 4 years probation on Monday. This news release came out of the court system. And Rocha had been convicted of distributing fentanyl, and he caused the overdose death of a local teenager. So Rocha ended up killing a local teenager, and he got 6.5 months, or 6.5 years, rather, pardon me. U.S. Attorney's Office said court documents show September 2021, Medford police respond to an overdose death of a local 17-year-old high school student. So he killed a 17-year-old. The teenager had taken counterfeit Percocet pills that had fentanyl laced within them. And the investigators then identified Rocha as the drug supplier. Fourth level. That must be what there were four levels in between. What you have the cartel, and then there's a mini cartel, and then a mini cartel, and then we get to the John Rochas of this world here. Do you think justice was done on that? Someone sells a fentanyl-laced Percocet pill to a 17-year-old. 17-year-old dies. Is 6.5 years enough, along with a 4 years probation? Tell me what you think about that. I'd like to get your opinion. 770-563-3770-KMED. So we have 6.5 years for killing a 17-year-old. And then there was another story that I was seeing, which also seemed to be... So 6.5 years for killing a 17-year-old with a fentanyl-laced Percocet pill. Meanwhile, Life News reporting that a pro-life protester was given nearly 5 years in prison for peacefully protesting outside of an abortion clinic. Have you heard about that one? So 5 years for protesting outside an abortion clinic. Of course, the claim is, though, that they blocked access to women's health care. You know, that kind of thing. There's that. What is the deal here? I'll have to look more into that article, but I couldn't help but draw an interesting comparison. 5 years for protesting out in front of an abortion clinic and maybe getting in the way of women's health care versus 6.5 years for selling a Percocet pill with fentanyl in it that kills a 17-year-old Medford teen. Hmm. Does that look like a proper version of justice to you? Yeah, I have to look more into that. Yeah, the pro-life protester, almost 5 years in jail. Wow. This is the Bill Myers Show on KMED and KCMD.
Millett Construction has been a general contractor for 40 years. For the last 20 years, they've specialized in foundation repair and replacement. If you have sloping floors, cracks in walls, and windows and doors that are hard to open, you have a foundation problem that's only getting worse. At Millett Construction, they not only fix your foundation and level your house, they solve the water problem that's causing the damage. Get on solid ground. Call Millett Construction for a free estimate. Visit MillettConstruction.com. CCB number 32787.
Are you adventure ready? Oregon Truck and Auto Authority is your source for overlanding, off-road, and outdoor lifestyle products, featuring quality options for rooftop tents, racks, bumpers, winches, and recovery gear, LED lighting, dual battery systems, onboard compressors, cargo cases, coolers, and refrigerators. They also offer camp stoves, scuttles, fire pits, tables and chairs, so you're prepared once you've reached your destination. Stop by Oregon Truck and Auto Authority, your department of adventure.
A Southern Oregon tradition like no other.
The City of Central Point Wild Rogue Pro Rodeo, presented by Rogue Regency Inn and Suites.
On Thursday, May 16th, kids get in free.
Head to your local Bi-Mart and get Thursday night general admission tickets for just $25 and free kids tickets, all a part of Free Kids Night.
Many of the nation's top 20 cowboys, cowgirls, and national finals rodeo stock are coming to the home of the only 100-point bull ride for this national finals qualifying event.
All new Ranch Day on Friday and Saturday, perfect for the whole family.
Kid-friendly dummy roping, pony rides, and more from 4 to 8 p.m.
So ride on down to the Expo in Central Point, May 16th, 17th, and 18th for the best Wild Rogue Pro Rodeo to date.
Starting at just $25. Get your tickets online at theexpo.com.
The Wild Rogue Pro Rodeo is sponsored by Bi-Mart, Lifer Excavation, Better Built Construction, KTVL 10, and Q100.3.
Jackson County, vote no on measures 15-224, 225, and 226.
Take measure 15-225, which would expand the number of county commissioners from 3 to 5. That increases the size of your county governing body by 67%.
This would increase the temptation to skirt public meeting laws, deliberate in private, and cause backroom deals. Stop bigger government.
The Chamber of Medford in Jackson County shares. These changes were not properly studied, nor have they had broad community input. The result of this lack of study and community input is a flawed set of proposals. These flawed proposals likely would result in costly consequences for the citizens of Jackson County.
Jackson County, vote no on measures 15-224, 225, and 226.
Visit StopBiggerGovernment.com.
Paid for by Stop Bigger Government PAC 23389.
Hi, I'm Lamont from Orleans, and I'm on 106.7 KMED.
In other news this morning, understand we had a bank robbery a day or two ago. Didn't realize that. It was kind of quiet. Interesting. KDRV reporting that cops are searching for a robbery suspect who went into the Umpqua Bank in Rogue River the other day, and no one hurt. Suspect fled before police arrived on scene. They described him as an unknown white male adult, approximately 40 to 50 years of age. He was wearing black sunglasses, a white Nike hat, white long sleeve shirt, gray pants, tattoos on his left forearm, and a Band-Aid on his right cheek. Hey, doesn't that sound like the guy that plays Mayhem on those Allstate insurance commercials? That sounds like him, right? Especially, you know, the little Band-Aid on his cheek there. And they told the public not to make contact with the suspect if they see him, but just call 911. So there we go. Robbery suspect. You know, interesting that they never talk about it. It's always an undetermined amount of cash, you know, that sort of thing. I wonder how much cash bank robbers are really able to steal out of banks these days. Have you ever wondered about this, given that there have been times that I've tried to, in the past, this is maybe just a few years ago, tried to go to my bank and cash a $2,000 check and actually get $2,000 in cash at one point. And the bank actually told us that, we didn't have the cash. I wonder how effective or how lucrative being a bank robber goes these days. Okay, give me all your Bitcoin. Give me all your Bitcoin. Give me all your gold. I don't know. Whatever the case might be, but yeah. Let's see. Years ago, I was trying to think that the best one they always talked about was the merchant teller. You know, the merchant teller would be the one that would usually be the most lucrative one to go after, from what I understand from people within the banking industry. But most bank robbers just don't really have that much of a brain to it when it comes to these, you know, planning of it. It's just kind of like, well, I need my next fix, and then in I go, and they don't really consider where that's going. But still, I wonder how much they really get these days. I really do. Let's see. Breaking news just came in here. New York Times reporting. Wow. Biden has offered to debate Trump with terms, and they're not using the debate commission. This is an interesting wrinkle. President Biden willing to debate Donald Trump at least twice before the 2024 election. But New York Times reporting without the group that has managed the debates since 1988. So no debate group. And it's behind a paywall, so I can't get you the whole thing here, but I'd at least get you the main salient point. The president wants two debates before early voting begins with no crowds. So no crowds. And he wants microphones that automatically cut off when a speaker's time limit elapses. What do you think about that, huh? Yeah, he wants that microphone. Well, microphones that cut off, would probably do more to hurt President Trump, because President Trump actually has something to say, while Joe Biden is going to probably have difficulty filling up the time allotted there, because he'll be sitting there fumbling and whatever, and it kind of mumbling around on this sort of situation. So that actually would be an advantage to Joe Biden, because the painful pause would have to wait. I was thinking at first that what they were going to offer was that, I want to be able to use a teleprompter. Would have a teleprompter, and I want to be able to have something in my ear with someone feeding me answers. That's what I figured would be happening. What did you say? All right. That's the latest. Market's looking pretty good today, because the claim is that inflation cooled slightly, 3.3% rather than 3.4%. Or was it 3.5 down to 3.4? I'll get that. By the way, ignore the inflation news. The inflation news is bullshit. And the reason for this is that the real inflation that we have right now, the vast majority of inflation that we're facing, is the kind of stuff that a lot of times the Federal Reserve doesn't like to keep track of, because it's too volatile. Food and energy, still high and getting higher. And also homes, shelter. Rent has gone up on average 0.5% a month for the last 3 to 4 years. And the Federal Reserve, the federal government, doesn't look at that as inflation. They don't count that as inflation. Just like when they see, even in the midst of 7-8% interest rates, that home prices are still continuing to soar in spite of all of that. They don't look at that as inflation. That's just the price going up. That's not inflation. You know, it's not asset inflation at all whatsoever. And so they count inflation much lower than reality. And you know what it's like if you've been going out trying to find a rental house, not just here in Southern Oregon. We've had an artificial shortage because of the arson-induced fires of a few years ago. You know, they had the Olmeda situation. But it fascinates me how they say that year-over-year inflation is only 3.3%. It's laughable. Absolutely laughable. It has nothing to do with real life of real Americans. And the Biden administration is saying, well, why aren't you loving your low inflation here so much? Yikes. So anyway, that's the latest. 6:30 at KMED, KCMD. We'll catch up on the rest of it. More of your calls and opinion. Eric Peters will join me here in a couple of minutes. Wheels Up Wednesday.
Jasper's Cafe, voted Medford's best burgers for 14 years running. Jasper's has been a local tradition for over 40 years. Come in and see for yourself why we've been recognized nationally for our amazing burgers featuring outrageous toppings and a delicious range of meats from local grass-fed beef to elk to bison and more. We're just 1 mile up North Pacific Highway from the mall, or check out our menu at jasperscafe.com. Jasper's, burgers with attitude.
Drake's Paint and Supply, your only locally owned paint store, is growing. Drake's is excited to announce a new store opening soon in South Medford that will offer the same top quality Benjamin Moore paint and stain and all the equipment and supplies the North Medford and Grants Pass stores offer, with the legacy of service and value Drake's is known for. Drake's Paint, your local Benjamin Moore dealer in North Medford, Grants Pass, and soon to be open in South Medford between Central and Riverside, just north of where the two combine.
News sponsored by Caveman Heating and Air. It's the climate, and we control it. Call Caveman Heating and Air at 541-476-0009 or cavemanheating.com.
With SRN News, I'm Rich Thomason. Inflation cooled a bit last month, although prices rose again. The Consumer Price Index up 0.3% from March. That was down slightly from a 0.4% increase the month before. Year over year, prices up 3.4%. Meanwhile, retail sales were flat. They were unchanged from April to March. Looks like more help will soon be on the way for Israel. There's word the Biden administration plans another shipment of ammo and arms to the Jewish state. This after President Biden put a hold on a shipment of bombs to Israel. Among the results from yesterday's primaries, Larry Hogan wins the Republican Senate contest in Maryland, while Angela Alsobrooks is the Democrat winner. West Virginia's Republican Governor Jim Justice will face Democrat Glenn Elliott in the U.S. Senate race in that state. The opening bell just sounding on Wall Street. The Dow up 166. SRN News.
Hi, I'm Charlie Moon. I've been in the trading game for almost 20 years, and I just discovered the most powerful trading tool I've ever seen. So if you're trading stocks or options, then listen up. This new AI-powered trade finder can find you stocks to consider trading, which have had gains as high as 1,729% and have had nearly perfect win rates. It analyzes the entire stock market in seconds and pumps out a list of trades for you to consider every single morning. And the trades it finds can be potentially profitable regardless of which direction the market is moving. So if you want in on this action, listen closely. For a short amount of time, I'm opening up free access to some of these picks and giving you the chance to get top trade ideas from the AI Trade Finder every day for 100% free. Just text TRADE to 76626. Stop trying to find the right stocks to trade on your own. Just text TRADE to 76626 now and get access to the top trades our AI finds every single day. Text TRADE to 76626. Standard text and data rates may apply. Past performance is not indicative of future results.
Joel here at Butler Ford and Truck Center, and here's the deal people keep asking about. When will we have more F-150s, the payment of only $445 a month? The answer is right now. Lease a 2024 Ford F-150 Crew Cab for only $445 a month. Work, tow, play, haul in a new Ford F-150 for only $445 a month at Butler Ford. Nobody knows how to make a lease deal work on a Ford truck like Butler Ford. That's why businesses and individuals have been coming to us for years when they want a new truck at a low payment, like $445 a month on a Ford F-150 Crew Cab. Whew! I'm running out of time in this ad, but call and ask about the low lease payments we're having on our new Ford Escapes. Remember, Butler says yes to bigger discounts and rebates. Butler says yes to giving you more for your trade. And Butler says yes to $445 a month on a Ford F-150. Butler Ford and Truck Center, just 12 short minutes south of Medford, right off of exit 19, where we've got your truck, your SUV, your certified pre-owned, hybrid, and electric vehicle.
36 monthly lease payments at 7,500 miles per year with 7,500 cash or trade due at signing, excluding tax, license, title, and 250 dealer dot fee on vehicle cap cost of $42,884. On approved finance through Ford credit. Offer expires 6/3/24.
We have some real issues here in Southern Oregon, and when it comes to the state senator to represent us, there is only one clear choice, Christine Goodwin. Christine is a strong, vibrant, get-her-done conservative who won't leave Southern Oregon behind against those far-left Portland politicians. Matter of fact, as representative, she has the number one conservative voting record of all time by nationally recognized CPAC in the legislature among senators, representatives, and congressmen serving over 2 years. Christine helped recriminalize hard drugs, strengthen laws for our police, and even worked to help Texas in trying to close the southern border. Hey, Republicans, make sure you vote Christine Goodwin for state senate in the primary. She's a winner, and let's back a winner. This former high school teacher, small business owner, commissioner, and school board chair knows how to get it done on all levels. Sending her to Salem to battle those urban politicians is the best thing we can do. Vote Christine Goodwin for state senate. Paid for by Goodwin for Oregon, PAC ID 21708.
106.3 KMED, 99.3 KCMD, and this is the Bill Myers Show.
I'm making money and I'm having fun with my radar gun.
Yeah, making money with our radar gun and talking the outdoor road. I don't know, has the radar gun hit you recently, Eric Peters, automotive journalist?
Oh, no.
How are you?
I always know how to run under the radar.
That's good. Good. Glad to know that. By the way, Eric Peters is an automotive journalist who actually tells the truth, which makes him quite valuable these days. And you'll find him at epautos.com. We talk with him every Wednesday about the vehicles and politics and so much more. Hey, first thing I wanted to touch in with you is that I was taking a look at that new little Chinese car. And as they turned it, they it's threatening a bloodbath for the U.S. auto industry.
Yep.
And what is it, BYU? What is it? What is the Seagull from BYD?
Yep.
That's right.
One of many. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Build Your Dreams is the company there. And it would seem to be exactly the kind of electric car that you're not allowed to have in the United States of America.
Well, I mean, the premise is if they really truly wanted people to be driving electric cars, they would be encouraging affordable electric cars. But really what they want is to use electric cars to force people to stop driving, period.
Yeah, because the Seagull, by the way, is $12,000.
Mm-hmm.
$12,000. Nice little commuter car. Good little thing, you know. Kind of reminds me of that kind of Toyota Yaris look, you know, that sort of thing. And you know, it may not be the most luxurious thing, but a good people mover from point A to point B. And the Biden administration says, hey, even if that comes here, it's going to have a 100% tariff put on top of that. Mm-hmm. Which means that at minimum it would be $25,000. So in other words, you can't have a $12,000 car. You can only have a $40,000 American built car. That's essentially
right,
what the Biden
right.
administration is saying, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, this little EV itself costs about the same as a replacement battery for the EVs that are available in this country.
Yeah.
And it just speaks to the issue. It speaks to it. You know, if the premise is there's a climate crisis, and because of this climate crisis, you know, we really got to hurry up and get everybody into a clean, zero-emissions electric car, well, then everything would be done to remove all the obstacles in the way of that, including price. And instead of focusing on building these incredibly overweight, incredibly over-expensive, high-dollar things that they're pushing on people, they would be like, yeah, this is a great idea. Let's get as many of these little $10,000 and $12,000 commuter EVs into circulation as possible, because that way we'll solve the climate crisis.
Uh-huh.
After all, it's a crisis, right? If it's a crisis, it's an emergency, and you got to do everything you can as quickly as possible.
But instead, what we're really seeing now is that the goal is to ultimately not have we, the people, be able to drive. Otherwise, they would
yep.
be happy to have inexpensive people movers to be able to get people.
Yeah, I mean, related to this, I did another article the other day about the latest disclosure from Ford that they are losing $100,000 on each EV that they sell. And I did a little numbers crunching and thought to myself, well, that means that in the case of something like the Lightning, which has a base price that starts around $60,000, in order for them to sell that thing at a very modest profit, you know, to make money rather than lose, they would have to sell it at something like $160,000, $165,000. And I think ultimately that's the end goal. They're not idiots. They know that the future is that they'll be selling boutique cars for people who are in a position to be able to spend six figures on an electric car, and everybody else will get to walk.
I will give you a classic example of this a six-figure boutique car. Now, they start at $82,000, but you know the Tesla Cybertruck?
Mm-hmm.
I saw my first one yesterday. There was one in West Medford, and I shared this on Facebook last night, and a lot of other people ended up seeing it too. And now it's $82,000 to start. Most of them, I think, have the probably the longer extended battery. So it's way over $100,000,
yep.
if I understand,
yep.
isn't it? Isn't that the case?
Yep.
So
yep.
over $100,000, and there's not even a space to drop the dog in the back, you know,
mm-hmm.
that kind of thing. And the part about this, which gets me even more, is that I think this is like the real super virtue signaling type of thing. But the styling of that car seems to be about everything that our culture is right now. brutish and ugly. And as I put it, it was like, this is the type of vehicle that you would see, you know, in which it's kind of like a Mad Max or...
Judge Dredd?
Yeah, Judge Dredd or RoboCop kind of dystopian. The type of vehicle that came out of those kind of movies. And then, you know, those big tires will be crushing future victims while we motor through the apocalypse. We'll be motoring through the apocalypse. And one guy said, yeah, for about 2 or 3 hours, then you're out of juice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, to give you some insight into the disingenuousness of this whole thing, did you know that small volume manufacturers, and there's one called Revology, can make, legally make, reproduce exactly correct 1960-ish Ford Mustangs that you can buy that are completely exempt from all of the current emissions and safety requirements because they're a small-volume boutique manufacturer. So if you can afford to spend $200,000, you can have yourself a brand-new 1966 Mustang.
But
it's just the rest of us can't have a Mustang that we can afford.
Yeah, but we're not allowed to have a Camaro any longer either, which you write about in EP.
Yes.
In fact, this is it. It's really the death knell of the Chevy Camaro. And boy,
they canceled it. Mm-hmm. And in a backhanded kind of a way, I'm complimenting GM because at least.
Oh, okay. Hold on. Wait a minute. You're complimenting General Motors. I just want to make sure that I'm hearing. Okay. Who is this guy? Is this really Eric Peters? You've had some issues.
Okay, per Pulp Fiction, allow me to elucidate.
Okay. All right.
They, as a matter of practicality, can't build a mass market Camaro with an engine anymore because of the CAFE thing and because of the global warming and carbon dioxide thing. The regulations have just gotten to be too stringent. It's not feasible for them to continue to offer the car with an engine, so that's why they're not going to offer it any longer. Now, they could have done what Stellantis is doing and turned it into another device. They could have made an electric battery-powered Camaro, but to their credit, they've elected not to do that, and I'm happy about that because at least the Camaro leaves the field with some semblance of its dignity intact.
That's good. And what happened in its various generations, you know, over the years? Can you actually describe some of that? I thought that was kind of interesting how they stopped selling the Camaro for a little while because apparently the styling wasn't as mass appeal as Mustang. Mustang always had pretty good appeal between both men and women.
Yeah, the Mustang, of course, was the progenitor of all the so-called pony cars when it came out in 1964. And it was so successful that all the other manufacturers, you know, hustled to the market with their own pony cars. And the Camaro was one of those. Another was the Dodge Challenger. And the Camaro came out in 1967. And they all tried to emulate that idea, not just of it being a performance car, but a fun car, an appealing car that a lot of people would like, whether they were men or women, whether they were young or they were old. And Camaro stuck to that pattern very successfully, particularly through the 70s and into the 80s. But when they changed the car for the fourth generation in the early 90s, it was a much more polarizing car. It was sort of this wedge-shaped thing that appealed chiefly to young guys who liked to have a powerful car, but women hated it.
Was that the version of the Camaro that they were using on that Hawaii Five-O TV show reboot?
I didn't watch the reboot. I don't know. But it's that what.
But it had really, really narrow windows, right? Really, really small, and it's like you're kind of hunched down in that. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And it was an awkward car. You know, Camaro was never the most practical car, but this one is a kind of an awkward car to get in and use. And again, demographically, women didn't like it. Older people didn't like it because it was difficult to get into and out of. It was chiefly a young guy's car, and there's just a limited market for young guys' cars, particularly when they get fairly pricey. So. It wasn't that the market had rejected Camaro as a concept. It just didn't like that particular generation of Camaro. So Chevy pulled the plug on that, I think, after 2002. But then they rebooted it, and they went back to a kind of a modern take on the original 67 through 69 Camaros. They emulated the styling very successfully, as Dodge did with the rebooted Challenger. And it was quite popular, and it sold really well. And that's the one that they're about to kill off now.
Okay. Well, Camaro, we loved you while we had you. Okay? Really.
Yep.
I think of all the times of, well, my first introduction to the Camaro was, I was a little kid. I was probably 6, 7 years old. Yeah, 1967. I was 6 years old then, and it came out. And my gym teacher, I forget her name now. She was a gym teacher in elementary school and a wonderful teacher. But she was a young woman, and she bought a 67 Camaro convertible. It was red. Mm-hmm. It was gorgeous. I thought it was a beautiful a beautiful car as a kid. And at that point, it had the little hideaway headlights in that first year, too.
She had the Rally Sport package.
Yeah.
Then. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. So, like I said, she was the cool teacher, let me tell you. And the part I also remember, though, is that the only downside to it is that I think it had that God, what was the name of it? We called that transmission the Slip-O-Matic, the Power Glide.
Oh, the Power Glide?
Yeah, the Power Glide. It only had a two-speed automatic transmission that came with
it. You know, actually, that transmission in heavily beefed-up form is used in drag racing very effectively. It's not a bad box. It's just that the way it came from the factory originally, in some of the low-powered models, it really wasn't designed to shift quickly or be a performance transmission.
Yeah, definitely. That's why, hence the nickname Slip-O-Matic. Mm-hmm. You know, you had to slip a lot to get it going. But still, great car. That was my first introduction to it. And, of course, I had friends of mine in high school that had the Camaros. They'd have Z28s or the – when did they bring out the Z28?
1970.
It was 1970, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then
I take that. 1967 was the first year, actually, but it was a very rare option. Most people didn't know about it. It became more popular beginning in 1970. Want to make sure I don't make a big mistake on that one.
Yeah. Now, what I am concerned about there, along with the fact that here's what another one bites the dust, another great vehicle bites the dust here, is how much longer can the Chevy Corvette last in the current regime?
Well, it's already gone. It's become a hyper-exotic in the first place.
Oh.
Look at it, and not that it's necessarily an unattractive car, but it sort of is analogous to the way modern jet fighters all look the same. They have that certain look that's dictated by aerodynamics. And the styling now takes a definite backseat because Corvette is all about the numbers. Like you and I have talked about before, these objective metrics. How quickly does it get 0 to 60? How
right.
fast does it go around the Nürburgring? Whereas back in the day when you had guys like Bill Mitchell, who was one of the chief designers of the Camaro and the Stingray, it was about looks. You know, in those early Corvettes, they couldn't even come close to keeping up with the current Corvette. But they were gorgeous, even when they were standing still, you know, and just having one to look at was almost as much fun as having one to drive. So there's that. You know, it's a disposable supercar. Right now people buy it because, well, it's quicker than this year's Ferrari, but next year's Ferrari beats the Corvette around the Nürburgring, and so who cares now? It's just another throwaway.
Huh. That's kind of sad because the other day, it gets to the point where I used to be able to recognize a Corvette, and I knew it mm-hmm. immediately, you know, what it was
yep.
because of the distinctive shape. And what they've done to it now, there was one, I was going down Delta Waters the other day, and this car was coming at me, and it had sort of the angry light face, which is so famously, mm-hmm. you know, used right now. Every car looks like it wants to eat you. as it's,
yeah, you know what it's analogous to? If you know about motorcycles, now the hyper bikes, the leader bikes,
mm-hmm.
the only way that you can tell the difference between a Kawasaki and a Honda is whether the plastic is blue or red.
Right.
I mean, they all look exactly the same. There's really no difference between them. And the Corvette now, of course, is automatic only, which detracts, again, from the experience of driving it. And as far as your question about them neutering it, guess what's coming out soon? The E-Ray, the electric Corvette.
So, well, I guess that's the real Stingray if it shocks you one way or the other.
Well,
right?
I harp on this endlessly because I think I'm right, and I think I'm going to be proved right. At the end of the day, if you know you electrify the Corvette, then what is it? It's just a differently, kind of somewhat differently shaped version of what Tesla and everybody else is selling. It's no longer really a Corvette. It's just another iteration of the same thing. So why bother with it?
Yeah. All right. Well, it's sad to see that happen, but I guess you predicted it. You knew it was coming. No surprise about that. And yet, at the same time, we have some great vehicles out there, and maybe you drove one recently, and I'll have to talk with you about the latest on that here in just a moment, if you don't mind. By the way,
sure.
If you have a question or comment on anything we've been talking about, if you wanted to ask Eric about a car that you're thinking about or a vehicle, if you think it would be a good choice, or like I said, he's driven thousands of them over the years in various reviews, and we'll actually give you a pretty good take on it, all right? 770-5633, 770-KMED. We return with Eric Peters shortly.
Looking for reliable roofing?
770-5633, the opportunity to talk with Eric Peters and talk to a real automotive journalist is yours. 770-5633. We had Tom on, and somehow we lost him, Eric, but I wanted to ask his question on his behalf, okay?
Okay.
Because I thought he brought up a really good question, and this has to do with all of the advertising that you hear right now about extended car warranties, in other words, to try to insulate you from the rising cost of repairs. And you'll hear the ads all the time, like, friends, if your car is under 200,000 miles and blah, 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 we can help you save money there. And what is your overall thought on that industry?
Well, it's a minefield. There are a number of variables there. Some of them are really scuzzy, particularly the ones that target older, very high-mileage vehicles. Those typically will gouge you for the plan, and then you'll find out that they won't pay out for anything. Now, there are some that are quite good. You know, they're in many cases affiliated with or backed by one of the manufacturers. So, you know, if you buy a relatively new used vehicle and, you know, they offer you an extended warranty that will pay if the transmission fails or some other major component fails, and, you know, the price is within reason, it's sometimes a very good idea to buy it. Like, let's say that you spend $2,000 on an extended warranty, and you know, 3 years later, the transmission falls out of it, and it would have cost you $4,500 to put a transmission in it. So,
oh yeah, $4,500 is not unusual for a transmission at all these days.
Not at all. Mm-hmm. You know, the cost of repairing modern vehicles is exorbitant. So sometimes it can be very sound to get the extended warranty, but it's very important to practice due diligence and find out who's issuing that warranty, what specifically is covered. Read the fine print before you buy it.
How do you know what's good and what's not when you're reading that fine print? Are there any particular caveats that might be brought up on a fly-by-night scuzzy insurer,
well, yeah,
as it were?
Like with anything else, like let's say that you are going to have some plumbing work done to your house. You know, you probably would want to find out the reputation of that plumber mm-hmm. or the company before you hired him to start working on your house, and it's basically the same thing that you ought to do here.
Okay, so what are some of the, maybe this could be a conversation for another time, maybe another article, you know, at some point, but
yeah.
Are there any particular brands that you know about that have been particularly good and or particularly bad? Any come
well,
to mind?
Well, particularly bad ones, yeah, I'm trying to think of the one that's known to be atrocious. I think it's CarShield, but I shouldn't have said it openly because I don't know whether that's the one that I'm remembering.
But CarShield's the one that I think everybody here has advertised. That's the one I was wondering about.
Okay. Yeah, look out for that. It's kind of like, you know, you hear those life insurance, those you're listening to the radio and, yeah, you know, no exam needed. You know, it'll cost you as little as $20 a month to get life insurance, even if you're 85 years old and diabetic and riddled with cancer.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
That's what you want to avoid.
And hey, Big Lou, because he's on wife number two and on drugs too.
Yep.
You know, that kind of. Of course, I don't know.
Yep.
That one might be just fine. He's just trying to shop around to find someone who yep. will cover you. But yeah, no medical exam. Life insurance is usually very expensive and doesn't pay all that much.
Generally
speaking.
And you know, you got to think. I mean, there is no such thing as a free lunch. And if a company is willing to give you a so-called extended warranty on your 200,000-mile, 20-year-old beater. You think they're probably going to pay out anything?
Probably not, okay. Now, definitely not a beater. I wanted to talk about your latest review here, and mm-hmm. this is the BMW i4. I noticed that it's no longer an M4. It is an i4.
i4.
So what do you say? What is it, an i4?
Well, it's interesting in a couple of ways. One is that, well, first of all, it is essentially a battery-powered version of the BMW 4 Series. They call it the Grand Coupe, which is kind of weird because it's a sedan. Mm-hmm. It's a hatchback sedan with what they call coupe-like styling. But the point is, this battery-powered version of the 4 Series Grand Coupe is only slightly more expensive than the engine version of it. It's
really?
About a $4,000 price difference, and so that's fairly remarkable.
Yeah, that is remarkable. What about the range? That's always the thing. If it's only just a little more expensive than the gas version, I start thinking that it's a short ranger. What do you say?
Well, it is. You get less range but more power. You know, you get 276 miles, I think it is, of standard range, but you get substantially more power than the 2.0-liter four-cylinder engine that comes standard in the 4 Series Grand Coupe. So it's a balance. And, you know, when I was doing the review, I was monologuing in one of my video reviews. It's really not so much the range, I think, that's the problem with electric cars. It's the time it takes to recharge them. You know,
yeah.
I've got several motorcycles, and none of them have a range that goes more than 200 miles. But it's not a problem because I can just fill the tank up in, you know, literally less than 2 minutes, and I'm back on the road. And if you could do that with an EV, it wouldn't be a problem. But it is a problem because you have to sit there for at least 20 to 30 minutes under the best-case scenario to get a partial charge back into the thing, and that's just unacceptable.
People forget that time is money, that there's a cost to our time. And one of the reasons
yep.
why we have vehicles to get us from point A to point B is that it's faster than walking or it's faster than taking a bus. Ultimately,
yep.
what I think is interesting is given that the world improvers don't want us driving and they would really rather have us be on the bus, I find it interesting that the only vehicle that will be allowed is one which you have to take a lot of time to refuel. which means it starts making the bus look more reasonable. Well, it's like I would have had to wait to charge this up. I might as well take the bus. And you have to think that's probably a feature, not a bug in the system.
Right. I would think that, you know, absent the mandates and subsidies, in other words, if we hadn't created this artificial market for electric cars, let's say the manufacturers were developing on their own, it would have been a necessary mandatory minimum baseline requirement that not only they go a certain distance, but that they can be put back on the road within a time period that is at least competitive with engined vehicles. Otherwise, you know, it's just not competitive, and that's why you've got the mandates and the subsidies.
Overall, though, the i4, I would imagine, being a BMW, is a competent vehicle. You call it that?
Very competent. You know, they do. Ironically, the weight of the thing, which is stupendous for what it is, it's a compact-sized hatchback sedan, but it weighs, what is it, 5,600 pounds.
Wow.
So it's heavier than a half-ton truck.
It's almost three tons. It's almost three tons.
The upside is it has the gravitas, literally, of a big, heavy vehicle. It weighs more than an engined full-size luxury car. So you've got that sense of driving a really, you know, solid vehicle. So that's an upside.
Okay, very good. What do you have for next week? Do you know?
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I'm going to get a chance to drive the Ford Maverick, which I've had before. That's their Ford's little compact-sized hybrid pickup, which I'm a huge fan of, and that thing has been extremely popular, and Ford is actually making money on it as opposed to losing money on it.
I really like the Maverick. I see quite a few of them. It looks like they snap them up as soon as they get off the truck.
Yep.
You know, they're delivered,
they
and boom, they're gone. And rightly so. I look forward to that. Let's grab a couple of calls here before we take off, though, Eric, all right?
Okay.
EPAutos.com, you're talking to a real guy. Hello there. Who's this? Welcome.
Yeah, Joel here.
Yeah, Joel.
Yeah, we got a 97 Subaru. And all of a sudden, the battery went and I had it up on the block, so I was trying to examine the drivetrain.
Okay, hey, Joel, slow down a little bit so I can understand what you're saying, okay?
Okay.
So you have a 97 Subaru, the battery's going dead. What's up?
Yeah, and I was curious, did he hear about any, the sunspot, the solar flare?
Oh, okay, that's really interesting. So you had an electrical problem after the flare. Hey, Eric, have you heard anything about that? That's an interesting question.
Not to my knowledge. You know, I mean, the question that I would ask the caller is, you know, how old is the battery? You know, if it's more than 2 years old and the thing's been in regular service, it's, you know, it's not unreasonable that it might be beginning to have issues. You know, you can always have it tested. You can take it to pretty much any auto parts store, NAPA, AutoZone, and they'll load test it for you to tell you whether it's having a problem.
Yeah, the one thing I would recommend is that when a battery, to me, is getting to be 3 or 4 years old, I know technically they can last longer, but I automatically replace them when they get about that way.
Yeah,
and it's just
not worth the hassle. You know, it's such a small expense, relatively speaking, as opposed to the hassle of, you know, waking up one day having to go to work and the car won't start.
Exactly. Hi, you're on with Eric Peters. Who's this? Good morning.
Good morning. Hey, this is Steve in Medford.
Yes,
hey,
Steve.
Bill, batteries cost $200 now. They've gotten way more expensive. And if you're going to buy a fancy electric car, you can't charge it at home unless you spend a lot of money. A normal house has a 200-amp service. In order to have a fast charger, you need a 600-amp service. And the hidden part of that is electric rates here are going up by 22%. Is that what it is?
Actually, they're talking about 50% overall when you compare it to just a few years ago. So, yeah, that's going to be much more expensive. And you're right about the if you want fast charging, you're not going to have a fast charger at your house. Isn't that right, Eric, pretty much?
Well, absolutely. Most homes simply cannot accommodate that. The best most homes can accommodate, and I'm talking about, like, I think 99.9%, is what they call level 2, which is a 240-volt, basically like an electric stove or a dryer
type
outlet. And even then, most people haven't got that in their garage. They've got it in the house for the dryer or the stove. So you're going to have an electrician come up and wire one from your box to your garage to wherever you're going to try to plug the thing in. And then you'll only have to wait 7 or 8 hours, typically, to charge up your EV.
All right. Before we take off here, overall, if the presidential election may actually have a lot of influence on how much of these intrusions we'll have to tolerate here. And have you heard anything about what Trump has been discussing if he were to be able to reverse some of what Biden's damage has done?
I've heard a lot of talk, which, you know, sounds appealing. The question is whether action will follow the talk. And that assumes, of course, he's allowed to be elected again. He's talked about rescinding most of the EV mandates and subsidies, dialing back the CAFE regs that have forced the manufacturers to hew to a 50-plus mile per gallon average fuel economy standard. He has talked about dismantling the regulatory apparatus you know, ending a lot of this carbon CO2 nonsense. And all of that would be great if it happens. You know, and at this point, the manufacturers, the car companies, have so bought into this green agenda. They've literally bought into it. They've invested billions and billions of dollars. So now what? You know, now they're for it, because if they are against it, they're going to have to disinvest in all of that and reinvest in all of these other things. And 4 years down the road, who knows what's going
to
happen?
Exactly. They would have to retool, and then who knows what comes in next, and then they'd have to retool again. And yet, because they have to plan out, what, 8-10 years in advance?
Absolutely. It has made for total chaos within the business, because they can't really do any long-term planning other than a planning on the assumption that the left is going to continue to control things.
All right, until you take them out of control, I guess is what I would say. All right, Eric.
Permanently.
We will talk with you next Wednesday, as always. Thanks so much for the talk. And epautos.com, great site, support it, and I certainly do, and we'll talk soon. You be well.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate you having me on.
Oh, always happy to. 3 after 7 at KMED and KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KCMD, Grants Pass.